Welcome to SciTech Culture with Steve Kern and Ben Warner, where we examine science, technology and culture in the 21st century. Visit our website at scitechculture.com.
So who would have thought that just two lifestyle habits are linked to some of the most preventable cancers? I wouldn't, any guesses as to which of these two lifestyle habits they would be? Let's spoil it straight off the top. It's essentially smoking and drinking. But I don't think we would be too surprised by any of that. If you think up to nearly half of these cases, according to this Science Alert article, lung, stomach and cervical cancers make up roughly half the cases. I don't know if one's worse or the other. You know, smoking is obviously stated as being something a really bad habit to have, and obviously drinking too much does that as well. Is there anything there that, or maybe it's just like one of those stories that comes up every now and then as a reminder to everyone, hey, you know, smoking and drinking is not something you should be doing. I don't know.
Well, I think there's a lot in that. I mean, smoking is probably, or tobacco use is known. It's one of the few actual carcinogens that has been actively linked to cancers and other diseases as well. Alcohol, well, you know, the world seems divided on this. You know, you've got some groups saying you can't even have one drink without, you know, increasing your risk. Other groups say you can drink in moderation. Seems to be, you know, varied across the board. Obviously, we know that there's more chance to have injuries due to alcohol consumption that you might not have had otherwise, but there are also health risks with that as well. I don't think the actual health risks of alcohol have ever been defined as clearly as the risk of smoking, though.
I guess that could also depend on person to person, how different bodies, accept the alcohol, etc. Apart from, like, if you drink way too much and you kill your liver, I think that's pretty self-explanatory. And for just about everyone,
if that happens, you won't die of cancer, though. So I think what's interesting in the drinking thing, there's a huge range of studies that show the deleterious effects of alcohol consumption. But I think what's interesting, as you point out, there's individual differences in consumption, body mass, and a whole range of other factors that affect, the impact of alcohol. Whereas smoking is very standard. You know, if anyone has one cigarette, it's going to do roughly the same damage or create the same roughly the same issues. So drinking's a little bit different to that. But, I mean, obviously, I think really what this points to is that, you know, there are a number of lifestyle factors which, if you engage in, just give you a much higher risk of cancer. Having said that, cancer's still no certainty, because I think, surprisingly, if you really look at the direct causes of death related to smoking, it's other cancers actually that kill you, not a lung cancer. So, or other diseases that kill you, not necessarily that. So we need to be mindful of this, but I think the story here is, you know, look after yourself as best you can. And that's the sort of thing that prevents cancers that we don't want or need.
Absolutely, for sure. All right, let's bring AI into the conversation now as change tack. I just thought this one was interesting in relation to shoplifting. I hope none of you are doing shoplifting out there, of course. But this idea that Bunnings was in a bit of a stoush, shall we say, about its introduction of AI facial recognition technology to combat store crime. This ruling that they got, which was, they got into trouble initially because they didn't really advertise the fact to customers that they were actually doing this. Usually a sign at the front doors, you know, saying we've deployed AI facial recognition technology, etc. They said they used it because they find that about 70% or so of shoplifters are actually recurring offenders, so they can, you know, match them up against the database, get the AI to scan your face, and then they get the AI to match it against a database of known recalcitrants who are doing this, and then they'll be able to, you know, follow up from there. And their claim was that if you're someone that wasn't on the list, then your facial recognition data would be deleted within microseconds off of the server and whatnot. But obviously they got into trouble with not putting the signs up, and they did get reprimanded for that, but they weren't told that they couldn't do it going forward. So this has kind of opened up the idea that other retailers can use this. Interesting use of the AI technology, to say the least.
Oh, it is, but it's one of these stupid sort of regulatory things more than the AI side of things. I think for any of us who have experienced or actually indeed witnessed some of the very brazen shoplifting crimes that I have in the last few years, which just kind of blow my mind because there's no attempt to conceal the item that they're thieving. They just walk in, pick it up and walk out. And with current laws or work practices, no one can actually stop them. Because of the risks, and it's probably a good idea. I'm not going to buy into that part of the argument. So having a system that would alert, I guess, teams, specialist teams within Bunnings, that somebody who likes to pick stuff up and walk out with it has just arrived, perfectly justifiable, I guess. But it's interesting, isn't it? Like, it's the inference that somehow that facial recognition might be used to sell you a leaf blower once you walk in the store. Now, this is very interesting because the tool, I'm sure, is just purely to identify shoplifters, but it wouldn't be hard to modify that tool somewhere down the track so that it does say, hey, Ben, leaf blowers, 50% off for you, you know, as you walk in. So It's an interesting thing, isn't it? What is the problem we're grappling with? I think it's very easy for Bunnings to justify the fact that they should have facial recognition for known offenders. It's another thing altogether. Is that what the regulation's trying to stop Bunnings? Or is it just trying to stop Bunnings because they didn't put a sign up saying you're being...
There wasn't enough, advance notice that people should be aware of this. It's a bit like, a casino having one of these signs up, which I've seen here, where, you know, they have that facial recognition technology there. You can imagine to ban, you know, so that they can catch people who may have been banned from the casino or have been a suspect issue or something like that.
Or winning at the casino, you know, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. I mean, the tool itself sounded interesting in the sense that with the amount of data that it would be collecting, it'd be too much for a human team to sift through everything. Probably it could probably save them some time, assuming, of course, that the AI is, you know, correct 100% of the time when it's doing its scanning. But again, like you said, it seems like it's got caught up in the fact that not that they used it, but that they didn't tell people that were using it.
Oh, exactly. And I don't know that I necessarily buy the inference that your data would be instantly dismissed, you know, because if you're shoplifting for the first time, then it has to have your image to match against you next time you come in. So that's kind of a grey area for me.
And just to wrap up on that, I'll just to pick up your, the more sales approach that would take, here's your leaf blower type thing. I think that would send them back to court pretty quickly, I would think, if that wasn't pre-advertised on the way in.
Well, it's interesting because Google's effectively doing that and they don't have to advertise it.
Yeah, it's all perception, isn't it? Because it's a retail store, and even though they can be the same thing, one can get away with it and the other one can't. Probably a size thing too.
That's right, and that's the point I'm making about, is this just a regulatory thing that there wasn't enough signage up? It's not actually addressing what the real issues might be, which is one that Bunnings needs to protect itself against thieves versus Bunnings taking your facial ID so it can profit from it. That's
right. One step forward to the Minority Report future. So there you go. All righty. Just finally, I did want to end discussing Avatar Fire and Ash. Now, this is just a little coda, so anyone that would have watched some of our episodes from a couple of years ago where I went on a bit of a rant about how disappointing I found the last film to be, you can go check that out. I think I was pretty clear about what I thought the issues were. So anyway, the third film comes around, and I guess we could have discussed it earlier. I saw it about a month or so ago. I was actually, like, my expectations were essentially in the toilet. I wasn't going in there thinking it would be high marks or anything. I personally was pleasantly surprised, only in the sense that it was actually better than what I was expecting. Now, that's qualified. I'm not saying it's great or a fantastic film or anything. But what it made absolutely abundantly clear, and it made me even more solidify my opinion of the second film, that the second film was redundant. It could have been 15 minutes of backstory put onto the front of this third film, because the third film actually told more, like, it actually did tell a different story this time. It actually did make an effort to tell a different story, even though it was repeating some of the same action beats and whatnot. And it also did something interesting with the villains in the piece. It went into a completely unexpected direction in terms of what they were up to. So I thought there was enough interesting in there for it to be worthy to go and have a look at. And it, so, but yeah, it was just, it just, again, it almost makes me want to, like, double down on my original, you know, Avatar 2 reaction, because it was like, you really just, like, padded that out. The only thing I could say is that 3 hours of backstory does give you an understanding of why certain characters are behaving the way they are. But did you need a whole 3-hour film to do that? I was actually thinking the other day, I think it was the first X-Men film. They did two-minute scenes that explained Magneto's background and Professor X's background. That was enough to explain why they were in conflict and why they're also friends for the rest of the franchise. How could they do that back then, yet we need like a 3-hour film to explain backstory? Anyway, that's just my stream of conscious thoughts on all of that. It was just hilarious, I thought. Great film to look at, by the way. Visuals are stunning, but, you know.
I still can't even remember what happened in the first one, Ben. But it's a saga. And with sagas, you know, they're a lot, more embellished, and they're a lot fuller in their storytelling. I'm sure that's what JC would tell you anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure, but is it just me, or am I just harkening back to the fact that, you know, back in the good old days, which might have only been 10 years ago at this point, they used to be able to tell these stories quite efficiently and quite quickly without, you know, extraneous amounts of screen time, you know? And I get that Avatar is designed to be a visual experience, audio-visual experience. Like, that's the big selling point of it. It's just, I stand by what I said about the second film. It doesn't matter how great it looks. It's the technology second to none. This is Hollywood on steroids in terms of execution. It's fantastic, but there's still no excuse. You have to have, you know, a tightly plotted or a tight screenplay that just punches straight through it and gets you invested without the extraneous bloat.
Completely agree. If a film doesn't excite you and take you on a journey, if you have to wade through the film, then for me, it's not very good storytelling.
That's wading through the film's a good description for the second film, given it was about water. So there you go. All right, Steve. I might wrap it up there. Interesting in terms of that. I wonder just finally where it's that Minority Report future that kind of caught me on that second story there. Are we actually going to get to a point where, you know, you're just going to walk down the street and your retinas are going to be scanned, and then screens are just going to be giving you personalized feeds Is that where we're going to go?
some might argue we're already there. It just doesn't quite look the same.
Well, on that, we'll keep an eye on it. Absolutely. All right, so that's it for this week's episode. We'll catch you next time.